public, because there's everybody's here that's going to be here.
Okay, great.
Yeah, we got it.
Okay, I got one.
Funding.
I got one.
I'm not gonna start by hitting you over the head with PowerPoint, but this is basically the slides up here are the slides for tonight's meeting. So in general, what we want to do is go through some information that we've developed over the last few weeks, and then we'll go through the slides for this evening's meeting. I'm not going to give, you know, verbatim presentation that we'll have this evening. But I want you guys to see what's in the slides, and if necessary, to the extent possible, if there's some things we need to wordsmith or discuss before the meeting this evening, then we'll go through and do that. So I passed out an agenda here. Write myself notes here. The first thing I wanted to do was give the summary that we put together of the goals and objectives, which we outlined from the meeting, prior meeting. Bingy, can I ask a favor? Would you be able to advance those slides?
Sure.
If you can advance, there's a slide that's probably 10 or 12 in that has the goals and objectives. It's a real...
Is that 10?
Keep going. There we go.
Okay.
Yeah. So I'm going to start by discussing where we're at, which is, this is a study and design development phase that's being funded through CAF. We don't have the funds in hand for construction. Those will be sought through other grants. The work is going to include the shore protection, potentially some environmental restoration, which, as we'll discuss later, is primarily limited to potentially some oyster reef, oyster habitat restoration or development. And then also planning for the park as a whole, which is what John and Fanny are going to discuss. Then this plan that's developed over the next, has been developed over the past few weeks and will continue to develop over the next month or so, will go to the city council. That meeting is planned, I believe, June 16th. And at that time, there'll be another opportunity for the public to give input and for the city council as a whole to vote upon this, so that we're developing everything in a consensus form as much as possible. And then finally, there's permitting involved, and as part of that process, the Corps of Engineers sends out public notices, and that's again another opportunity for people to give any comments. Of course, we'd rather have the comments now before that public notice process.
I think, if my memory serves, and I probably don't have my notes with me, but if memory serves, we will have another meeting just like this in the future,
yes,
in that June 18th time frame, somewhere around there, then have another meeting like this evening for public input, and the following Monday, then finalize our plan. The following Monday, we present the council our proposal.
Okay.
I believe that's how it's supposed to be.
Okay. Okay. And let me, can we advance to the next
slide? June 16th, yes.
Oh.
Yeah.
So
it's
sitting here and
yeah, I appreciate that. I don't think there's a remote control
to
that.
Or?
Okay, and here's the goals and objectives. This is really what I wanted to focus on, and this is what we came away the other night, and I tried to boil those down, and I wanted to make sure we're all in relative agreement about that. So what we understood, the primary objectives. Number one, preserve Shell Beach and all the uses of it that are currently there. Two, preserve the boating and fishing in that near shore region, so we're not just focusing on the shore itself, we're also concerned about the area close to it. Three, preserve the views of the bay, and then create a durable structure to withstand at least Ike, which we're saying somewhere in the 50 to 100 year type design storm. Preserve the access to the fishing pier and the function of the fishing pier and the boat ramp. consider improvements to the park, particularly planting vegetation, a walking path, and also addressing parking issues. Now, we've had some email exchange, and it sounds like we're probably not going to be putting any additional parking in, but I think parking is still an issue that we have to consider and address somehow, even if that the way we address it is that we're not going to add anymore. But it's a concern that we're
in the parking scheme, is there like separate parking for golf carts and so forth?
At present, the feedback that we've gotten is that we're probably not looking at adding any additional parking on the coast side of Miramar, on the shore side of Miramar. So the only parking will be the spots that are there presently, and they won't be differentiated between, you know, golf cart or car or whatnot. Now, one thing that we're going to have to look into a little bit, and I don't know if you guys maybe have more experience on this than I do, but there may well be ADA parking requirements. Since we're doing improvements in the public park, we may have to take one of those parking spaces and make it ADA compliant.
Yeah, you may have at least one of them. If there are only three, you're probably going to have one.
Yeah.
That's too far away.
And that may take up two spaces. So
Yeah, it'll probably have to be fan accessible.
Yeah, so you end up with much wider. A handicapped spot and another one.
And a bike rack.
Another regular space. Yeah. If you don't add any additional, pavement, which is what we're hearing,
Now, I'm not sure. We may have to get, ADA compliance specialists involved to advise. Yeah. If we don't touch that parking lot at all and we make other improvements, whether or not we still have to add any ADA spots.
Well, and I think if we want to just keep those two or three spots that we have, we would probably be willing, if it was a wheelchair, ADA compliant, and maybe a golf cart or two space.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe we could figure out a way to make it so that that's really what it is. They couldn't park anything near but a golf cart.
Mm-hmm.
And then, of course, the wheelchair would be marked.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
That'll go over real well.
That's going to bring a lot of revenue to the city.
Just saying.
Well, I think you'll see that the conceptual plans we're going to be looking at today really don't, there's no definition. I mean, there's no new parking, but there's no clear references to what the parking is.
Right.
Yeah,
but we're just saying if we do have to add one because of the improvements, that would be the spot we would add it.
But if you do have to add an ADA parking space, then don't you have to add some kind of access to the beach for an ADA?
Maybe. The experience I've had on that before on other projects is if it's a if you're adding amenities that you have to make those ADA accessible, if they would be otherwise. So, for instance, I've had beach nourishment projects, and the questions come up, well, do you have to give wheelchair access onto the beach, which is very difficult to do on sand?
Mm-hmm.
And the ADA specialist that I've consulted with in the past advised, no, you do not, because that is not a surface or an area that would have otherwise been accessible. So, but I think there's sort of some gray areas in there, and it's something that has to be worked with.
Do you think having access, ADA access, would put us in a different category for any of the grants?
They're all going to require it. It's basically state law. It comes down from federal law, but it's state law.
There's state
improvements you do, you're going to have to comply.
We're going to walk like it's come. It's the end of the shared walkway. We're talking about adding that walkway.
If we have the walkway along the menu, it could be a way that the walkway
just ends at that parking spot.
It sort of does. You'll see. I mean, there's a way to walk back to that part.
Yeah.
Well, you don't want to, you know, you like to talk about concepts and things before you show pictures, sure. Because then once you show the pictures, people don't necessarily hear what you say.
Right.
They're concentrated on pictures.
Okay, well, let me move on, and we'll get into some more of the specifics later. But wetlands creation and restoration was not favored, but we're potentially looking at some oyster habitat integrated into the other elements in the design. Tying into the private property that at each end is critical, and making sure that we don't cause or exacerbate any erosion issues. And then lastly, any mitigation for hurricane damage on the properties on the north side or west side, or I guess south side or west side of Miramar is a benefit, possible benefit, but it's not the focus of the project. So, want to make sure I've captured everything and that we're all in relative agreement that that's great. Let's go into the. If you can forward me to the slides that, the next, actually the next slide, 17 and 18.
So just open a bit so that you know what.
That's fine, that's perfect, okay. Yeah. So I've put together a couple of slides for the alternatives, and these are very high level pros and cons of each of them. This really follows the discussions we had the other night, but riprap revetments are. I'm not going to try and read those. I'll let you guys read and just comment if there's anything you see that brings up question or comment.
And this will be for the entire lake.
Yeah, I'll talk a little bit about what elements are in what area and really.
This is kind of the alternatives that are available for
the shore protection. Shore protection. Sorry.
Okay.
Now that concrete rubble revetment, what exactly is that?
That's what's there now.
That's what's there now. Okay.
Yeah.
And with rubble.
Rubble instead of rock riprap revetment.
Yeah. Debris maybe would be a better word.
Yeah. Everybody's old foundation.
Yeah, and I thought it was important they put some, you know, question come up, well, why don't we just put back what we got now?
Because it hasn't worked.
Yeah. Okay, and let's go to the next slide if everybody's questions there.
That's fine.
And then the concrete cellular mattress or articulating block mattress, there's a lot of different names for these, but these are the concrete mats.
Is that where there's concrete and then something on top to hold it in? Or?
They're blocks. They're actually a lot like paper blocks that are strung together with cables.
Okay.
At Sylvan Beach,
right.
They've got the articulated concrete.
I'm sorry, I missed the last meeting. So.
Cable connected precast units. Thanks.
Okay.
Okay.
There's
no comments, and I'll go. I have developed a couple of cross sections. If we go to the next slide. This is just to give some idea of what a concrete or a riprap revetment would look like. We're talking 2 to 5. Since I developed this sketch and done some more calculations, it's more on the 4 to 5 foot thickness of the large rock on top. These rocks would be on the order of 2 to 2.5 foot diameter each rock. So these are big rocks. They're much bigger than the riprap that's out there, and the concrete rubble that's out there now. And then have an underlayer under that. And you can see the toe of the structure, the bottom of the structure. We have to dig down into the existing ground and extend out for some distance so that it doesn't get undermined. And that's the area that we have some opportunity to put some, do some oyster seeding on to try and get some environmental benefit credits for the project.
Mm-hmm. And now, is there anything on top of those rocks to hold them?
No, it's just the weight of the rocks.
Just the weight of the rocks.
Yep. And when we get into John and Feng Yi have done some cross sections that modify this a little bit to integrate it with the other amenities that we're going to talk about. So we'll see that. But generally, it's the same.
But as I understand it, Larry, I mean the limestone, the irregular limestone pieces. Uniform but irregular, they lock together
better than
concrete slab, you know.
Yeah.
So how does that hold up to a hurricane.
Much better. There's two issues. One, the limestone is a lot denser than the concrete. It's not a lot denser, but that amount difference makes it a big difference.
Uh-huh.
And the second issue is, like John's saying, the rubble, concrete rubble, tends to be real slabby.
Yeah.
You know, it's thin slabs.
Right.
And they work like sheets on top of each other, and they get lifted up by the waves. Whereas these are more, they're not circular, but they're more uniform dimensions.
Yeah. Okay.
And like John said, they get, the next slide actually shows a picture of a completed structure. This is a low area structure, but you can see the stones are,
right.
When it's done properly, they're packed together.
It's like those things on Galveston.
Yeah, like jetties, but not.
Yeah, like the jetties. Yeah.
But they're not 4x4x4
right.
Granite.
Well,
but
it's the same.
But it's the same kind of idea.
Yeah. Okay.
And I like the granite jetties down in Galveston, but that's very expensive.
Oh yeah.
Tons of granite.
Is this riprap going to tie into the existing park, or are you going to extend the park out?
That's one of the details we still have to work on, but like I said before, our preference from a constructability standpoint is to not have to build out and fill and compact, but from a constructability standpoint and also permitting-wise, it's a little more difficult to do. But that said, the north end of the park is already very, very narrow. So we're going to have to, once we get the survey data back, so they've done the surveys and we're waiting to get the data now, then we'll go into the layout exercise and develop, you know, the exact layout along here. But
it'd just be nice to hang some ground back.
Yeah, I think the Corps wants to keep it.
Well, I bet. I bet they do.
Okay.
Well, the part that goes under the water,
mm-hmm.
about how far out was that?
Can you go back to the slide, Peggy? Yeah. I appreciate you running out of me.
Is that what those lines are?
Yeah, okay. So you see that the lower line there is what we call the mean lower low water. Is that low tide, normal low tide? And I'm estimating it's about minus 2 feet below that, 2 foot below low water at the toe of the structure. And that would extend out about 8 to 10 feet.
What would happen with all the riprap series?
We're gonna pull all that out.
Yeah.
There's no. I think that would just weaken the structure overall.
Good.
That'd
be nice.
And Larry, basically, with this section, with the geotextile fabric and the underlaying, from a settlement standpoint, this is a lot more stable than a riprap. I mean, the old concrete.
Yeah, it is. I guess two issues there. Yeah, it's more. It's not going to get moved around by the waves and settle like that has. But also, the nice thing about a revetment like this rock is, if you do get some damage or settlement, it's very easy to repair it because you just basically come back and add more rock.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. My experience down here has been that the concrete stuff it sort of just keeps sinking.
Yeah.
Right.
And then you have to put some more on it. So this is a much better. Yeah.
And as John said, the geotextile, that's probably one of the issues out here now, is that they didn't lay anything underneath this. So there's no filter layer. It kind of gets washed under the mud underneath. It gets washed out.
What happens if you start digging there and you find that there's riprap all the way back to the road? Do you have to keep taking that out, or what do you do?
It
could be.
That could be.
That, I don't know.
Yeah, so you do some soil.
Well, I know in some spots it goes back at least 4 feet or so.
Yeah.
In front of our house, about where Forest is, that's just pretty much riprap, I think, all the way
to the road.
Yeah.
If you start trying to plant a tree in there, you're going to hit rock.
Well,
it's riprap. It's rock.
Yeah. We are doing soil borings. Those will start this week. Of course, those are just a few points along there. But
be interesting to find out.
Yeah, we will see from that. And that is an issue that we'll have to deal with in construction phase if it happens.
Okay. That looks nice.
Yeah, this is a concrete mats. This is actually a slide that I hid just because of the scale of it. It's kind of hard to see. They look very nice when they're brand new. If you go, I think the next slide thingy is the next one here. That's what my experience, that's what they look like after 10 or 15, 20 years. Maybe not quite as nice. But if you go up a slide, this is, I've done some initial calcs on these block maps. The largest size you can commercially buy are 9-inch thick. And in order to make those stable, we'd have to set these on about a 10-to-1 slope, which is not a very steep slope. That winds up cutting the slope back by about 110 feet total. So, you know, we would wind up cutting the slope back significantly.
We don't really have that much room on the north.
On the north side,
we don't have that much room north of the pier. So, yeah. I mean, you don't have 110 feet. You know,
when did you say, after how many years, the mat starts doing a little?
5, 10, 20. Depends. And I've seen some that are 20, 30 years old that look very nice. I was over at a facility in Lake Charles where they had some that were very nice. You'd have 100 feet that looked great, and then the next, you know, 50 or 100 feet look like hell. Mm-hmm. And I think a lot of it, there's a lot of quality control issues when they put them in and the contractor, you know, how they tie them all together and how good they do the subsurface and everything. So, you know, I think they've got their place, but in my opinion, this isn't really good at
it. Well, it'd be nice because you could walk on it, but yeah. I see what you're saying.
It also shows all the vegetation growing up in there, so that once again, there we have the same problem that citizens have complained about.
Well, I think we're going to have that no matter what, no matter what you put in there, even with that first one.
It's pretty deep, I don't
know. Yeah, it's pretty deep. I mean, you're going to have dust and, you know, you'll have
sediment and
soil and stuff, you know, kind of blown in, but it is deep enough so that I don't think you'll get any substantial vegetation.
No trees.
I generally, it's so thick of rock that nothing really comes up.
Okay.
And then the next alternative shows a typical, this is a steel sheet pile type bulkhead wall. The nice thing about this type of approach is that you're essentially get right to the water's edge. You don't lose any real estate, if you will. You still do need some riprap of the toe to keep from getting scour erosion at the toe of the wall. In my experience, generally a steel sheet pile bulkhead is more expensive. I've done some initial costing, and right now I'm coming up with about the same cost, maybe a little cheaper than the revetment, but I don't yet have any design parameters to actually size the sheet pile, etc. So I think that's probably not true, that typically this is a little bit more expensive per, you know, per foot of park, per foot of shoreline. And the other issue with sheet pile steel is you got a corrosion issue over time, which we can design for a 25 to 50 year design life by adding additional thickness to the steel such that it, you know, still has enough there to be structurally stable at the end of that design life. But, you know.
And the design life of the rock?
Pretty much from now until forever.
Oh, okay. Other than, you know, the settlement we talked about, but from my experience, my family owned property for 27 years up at 214 Sylvan in La Porte. But if you get big washover on these walls, then you get scouring it behind it, and especially if you don't have enough riprap, and we didn't have any riprap in front of our wall before Alicia. You get scouring, and you lose. Mm-hmm. We lost 85 feet of the aluminum 5-foot high wall. So
even the concrete ones.
Yeah, concrete. I mean, you could have a, you know, cantilevered structured concrete wall, and that's maybe that's a little different, perhaps. Yeah. But
it still happens.
Yeah.
So what's that horizontal fixture that says tie something?
Oh, tie rods.
Yeah, that's the tie back for the for the wall.
There's a lot of different ways. The simplest way is you basically drive another row of sheet pile some distance back, usually 40, 50, 60 feet, and then you lay rods with turnbuckles in them to tension it together or rod.
Do you have that much room to do that?
Well, you've got to. That's one of the things. You've got to excavate all that out.
Yeah.
lay those tie rods and tension them, and then you have to fill it all back and impact it.
You'd have to excavate 50 feet for the whole.
Yep.
The whole field to do it that.
Yeah.
Kind of do it that way.
So it would be a big disturbance to the park. Now you can do that as you go. So maybe you're working 100, 200 foot section at a time, but.
But you can't do a north park.
We would have to cross the river.
Yeah, you'd be.
Yeah, the other alternative, you can do what you call a cantilever wall, where there's not a tie back. But then you need a bigger sheet pile section to do that. So that's just one driven pile, but it's got to be a lot stronger. So. So just to lay out, I've done just first, you know, order of magnitude type cost on these alternatives. And these still haven't gone through, you know, reviews and checks and all, but I think they're on the right order of magnitude. So for the rock riprap revetment, about $8.5 million for the full length of the project, and that's before contingency. Typically put a 20% contingency at this stage, so that brings us up to about $10.2 million for the length of the park. So steel sheet pile, like I said previously, I'm coming up showing that cheaper right now, but I don't think this is very accurate, but I'm coming up to about $6 million before contingency, and about $7 million with contingency. And then the concrete articulating block mass, about $8.6 million before contingency, about $10.4 million after. So the concrete mass and the rock riprap are about the same order of magnitude cost, which is why a lot of times you see both of them used in this area. But that gives you some, you know, general idea of what kind of cost we're talking about.
Okay. I guess if there's not any other questions, I wanted to really get into the stuff John and Fanny have done, but I want to let Dan talk a little bit about what he's found on the wetland delineation, and maybe if you could maybe give a little bit of outline of the whole Corps of Engineers permitting process.
Okay. Well, we visited the site when we first looked at it. There's a tool called NWI. It's a U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service map. Indicated there's some wetlands down near the beach area. But we got down there and we were relieved to see there's no wetlands. It's all basically upland down to the tide line. You know, there if we GPS the ordinary high water or the mean high tide line, and that's going to be the point where the Corps of Engineers jurisdiction will begin for this project. So anything that you do below that mean high tide line out in the bay will be a permitted action. So we'll have to submit a permit application to the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers. They'll probably want to see mitigation of some kind, which will be hopefully they'll be satisfied with moisture seeding on the rocks, but you never know what they're going to want until you get there and talk to them. And we're going to schedule a meeting with the Corps here fairly soon just to kind of get their input. They'll have what they call a gym where they bring all the different regulatory agencies in, and so we get all the issues on the table at the same time, because a lot of times what the Corps has learned is you get different agencies, they all have their different desires, and you end up going back and forth between them trying to satisfy to their desires so they get all their demands or conditions. We get all those up on the table so we can address them all in one shot and let them kind of debate it within themselves, and so we have a straight path forward. But we'll submit the permit application to the Corps. You can usually do it around the 60% design stage. You have to be fairly certain that there's not going to be any radical changes with the design once you submit the permit, because that starts the regulatory clock all over again. And so they'll read through it, they'll process the permit application, and they'll have comments. We'll address the comments. We may have to have, you know, two or three meetings with the Corps to kind of talk them through the process, or have them talk us through the process. And then we, at some point, we'll get the permit application. We'll have to develop a mitigation plan probably for this, and we'll propose a minimal mitigation we think that they'll accept. And then they'll have a public hearing on the project where they invite all the adjacent property owners to a public hearing and get their input on that aspect. And once they satisfy the public, or address all the public's, they don't have to satisfy all the public, they address the public's comments, then they'll issue us the permit application. This could be 6, 9, 12 months to go through this process once we submit the permit application.
Dan, does that mean that the core, the portion of the revetment that's underwater or below the is it high tide or the mean?
Yeah, the mean high tide.
Mean high tide. Mm-hmm. That means that they look at that portion of it only, I mean, relative to the revetment.
That's right. They have no jurisdiction on anything.
Above.
Yeah.
That's true, but it's part of the overall project.
Yeah, you can't segregate the project.
Yeah, you can't.
But you only have to
just put in a little piece. You got to.
Yeah.
I've tried that before.
if you look at the four corners where the water meets the land, and say this is your shore slope right here, they're only interested in this fourth quadrant out here. Anything above the water, above that Oregon High watermark, even if it's. Now, there's Section 10 issues if you put things above the water, but what they're concerned about is fill, and that's in that one quadrant. If it's landward of that mean high tide, they don't have any say over that. So that's the only area that they're concerned about. There'll be other agencies that will have conditions. They'll review the permit, they'll have conditions possibly on the permit. But that's basically it's a 4-4 Section 10 permit. It's a Section 10 permit because it's navigable water of the U.S.
And I was going to say, on the public meeting, they can waive that if they feel like there's been enough coordination already.
Yeah, and that's one of the things we'll try to, it will mainly be, I think, people that will be coming to the public meeting tonight. And so if we can show them that there has been adequate public meetings to satisfy the NEPA process, they have to do an environmental assessment, an internal document that shows the impacts of the project. And part of the NEPA, it's an EA, it's an environmental assessment, is public involvement. So that has to occur. But the fact that y'all are having all these meetings up front will help in that regard.
Question, you say your findings was there's no wetlands at all?
There's three criteria for, there's wet land,
yeah.
But the three criteria for it to be a wetland will be there has to be hydrophytic or vegetation present. There has to be signs of hydrology, and there has to be hydric soils. And that's the bottom of the bay would have unaggregated material, but there's nothing there. But it all lacks vegetation. Where you have vegetation, you don't have the other two parameters.
Yeah. The only question is there's some comment about restoration of wetlands, restoration of marsh, but there never was one there, in my view.
There, I don't know what I looked at aerial photographs going back quite a ways, and I've not seen any.
Yeah.
If you did do marsh establishment, marsh enhancement, that might make your permitting a little bit easier. But it may, it's going to be something that the public doesn't want. And,
well, nobody here. Well,
no,
I think
yeah.
Okay. We've pretty well gotten that picture. Not proposing any wetland restoration.
I mean, that's just something. We'll have to explain to the Corps what the alternatives that we looked at are, and you can try to. They want you to choose the least environmentally damaging alternative. So we need to prove to them that what we're doing is the least environmentally damaging alternative. So before we proceed on, but that's going to be the process.
Okay. And then Fenya, I'll let you.
It?
Yeah.